There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
NFL Live, Kansas City bounces back from a 24-point deficit. They hang 51 on the Texans to move on to the AFC Championship game. Lamar Jackson, the MVP front runner, but the Ravens come up short against the Titans. What does the future hold in Baltimore? And tonight we crown a new national champion in college football. Mel Kiper is here. He'll break down the names you'll soon see playing on Sundays. Hello, everybody. Hope you had a great weekend. Glad to have you with us on this Monday. Tim Hasselbeck, Victor Cruz, Field Yates. I'm Wendy Nix. Mike Tannenbaum will join us in just a bit. Well, and then there were four. We've got the 49ers, the Packers on the NFC side of things. In the opposite equation, the Titans and Chiefs round out the AFC. Mahomes and company launched one of the greatest comebacks in postseason history. Still doesn't top the Bills. 32-point comeback in the 92 wild card round, though, which was fueled by Frank Reich's four touchdowns. And remember, Andy Reid and the Chiefs were on the odd end of a 28-point comeback. That was the 2013 wildcard game. This was after Andrew Luck brought back his Colts passing with nearly 450 passing yards. Then in Super Bowl 51, we all remember Tom Brady leading his team to an overtime win. This is after they were trailing to the Falcons by as many as 25. And then we have the Chiefs just behind that. They climbed back from that 24-point deficit yesterday to score 51 points. In the first quarter, Mahomes completed just four passes, the same number of drops his receivers had. He passed for 278 yards, five touchdowns the rest of the way. Only Doug Williams in 87 had ever passed for four touchdowns in a quarter of a playoff game before Mahomes did just that on Sunday. Overreaction Monday. This Chiefs team, this particular team, is Andy Reid's best chance at a Super Bowl win to date. Tim, is that an overreaction?
Yeah, that's an overreaction. And I think I'm guilty of it. I think we all kind of are guilty of it. We focus so much on offense. We focus so much on the quarterback. Patrick Mahomes is better than Donovan McNabb was. Not to take anything away from Donovan, because he was a tremendous player with an amazing career. But we focus so much on the quarterback. I think we are not paying enough attention to what the defensive is like in Philadelphia. Look, they just scored 51. So they may win a Super Bowl by outscoring people. But when you go back to those Philadelphia teams, I mean, you have Brian Dawkins at safety. You had Troy Vincent and Bobby Taylor at corner. You had, Hugh Douglas at defensive end. You had Corey Simon inside. You had studs at linebacker. Like, that was a really, it was a defensive-led team, you know, or teams, you know, multiple years. They still were really good on offense as well when you think about some of the guys they had on that side of the ball. So I actually think those teams were maybe better, but this is still a really good opportunity.
Yeah, I'm going overreaction as well for exactly what you said. I think those Philadelphia Eagle teams, I remember growing up watching those teams and being like, wow, this team is loaded. Defensively, offensively with Donovan McNabb, I think those teams, the way they were built, we're just, if you put those teams up against this Chiefs team from top to bottom, I think you'll find more playmakers on the Eagles side of the ball than you will on the Kansas City side. And I think that's a deciding factor for me.
Not an overreaction for me, and I'm not just trying to be a prisoner of the moment.
Somebody's going to accuse you of that.
No, it's okay, and I will live with that if such is the case. But a couple of factors here to begin with. They do host the AFC Championship game now, so that's important. You play a team in the Titans that has been remarkable, and I'm sure we'll talk about them plenty throughout today's show. But back-to-back-to-back games, winning on the road is certainly very difficult. But and Tim is right. And Victor agree with him, and I agree with their assessment that they may have been more balanced versions of the Eagles. But I'm just not sure it matters when your quarterback is transcendent. And I think that we have this propensity for crowning quarterbacks far too soon, and perhaps we got a little bit ahead of ourselves this year, specifically with Lamar Jackson. But I think Patrick Mahomes, three seasons into his career, and now two full seasons as the starter, is doing things that are just there isn't a defense for them right now. And I look at the opponents they could play. They're going to have to beat two to win a Super Bowl. Certainly, we know the Titans are one of them. I just don't know how you can contain this offense enough I think it's Andy Reid's best chance at a Super Bowl win, and I think he would certainly rewrite his legacy with just one Lombardi trophy.
I think he would rewrite his legacy. I hope we can put the graphic up that we had of the trips that Andy has had.
Yeah, Chiefs
the win losses, losses. Yeah.
Because when you, if we can pop that graphic up again, when you look at the run with Philadelphia, like, I hope people remember what it was like. Exactly. I mean, he got fired in Philadelphia, but like, you just look at this.
Look at this.
01, 02, 03, 04.
NFC Championship. Okay? NFC Championship.
And
NFC
Championship.
I'm just telling you. Like, now,
he's
here's the
one five on Championship Sunday.
And the challenge has been, you know, the Rams, it was the greatest show on turf that he was dealing with. The Buccaneers, they went on to win it. That was, they hosted at the Vet. Mm-hmm. You know, the Panthers obviously had a good year. And then, you know, 04, you're talking about, you know, that's, you know, Michael Vick era. So, like, but that run there. So just so people understand, like, how good the team was, you don't rip off that type of success doing that for that stretch of time if your team kind of all the way around, the offensive line play, the defensive line play, secondary, like, Those teams were loaded.
Yeah.
Well, easily we can agree that he's one of the better coaches to not win a Super Bowl. 1-5 on Championship Sunday. But when you see that list, I mean, he has been there often. Mm-hmm. I understand you're often judged historically by the ones you win. Mm-hmm. But he's certainly gotten great teams there. And he's got another chance, whether it be his best or not, another opportunity on Sunday. Let's talk about the Texans for just a minute. One pivotal moment in their loss to the Chiefs, the second quarter, Bill O'Brien dialed up the fake punt. 4th and 4 from their own 33. The Chiefs sniffed it out. It didn't work. 3 plays later, they score a touchdown. Here's Bill O'Brien on that decision.
We felt like, you know, we weren't going to be able to punt it too many times today. You know, we felt like that we had to try to manufacture some points, manufacture some yards, and just didn't work out. You know, it's just something we decided to do, but the play didn't work.
It's no doubt. I mean, you might have doubt, but there's no doubt. I mean, I love that man. I'm going to play hard for that man. And, I mean, y'all can say whatever y'all want to say, you know, through all the media and all the writing. But as long as I'm at quarterback, he's cool with me.
Again, on Overreaction Monday, I'll say this. The Texans need to move on from Bill O'Brien. Victor, is that an overreaction?
I think it is. I think it is an overreaction. I think when you look at Deshaun Watson and his maturation process, I think a lot of that's accredited to Bill O'Brien and the way he's put that team together, the way he's given Deshaun Watson kind of the wherewithal to do those things and to be himself and to put plays and put him in positions to be himself. And I think the Deshaun Watson we see right now today, yes, I know there's a couple plays that make you scratch your head, like the fake punt and like not going for it on one of those fourth downs where you feel like Deshaun Watson should have went over and said, hey, let's go for this. Let's get some of that momentum. Let's take some of that momentum back from the Kansas City Chiefs, which – once they scored that first touchdown after being down 24-0, it almost felt like the momentum was stripped away from the Houston Texans. And Deshaun Watson should have said something to kind of get that back in his favor to his head coach that they have such a great rapport with. But I don't think it's enough to say we need to run Bill O'Brien out of town. I think they need to continue to build on Deshaun Watson's success and kind of take it year to year.
Field, agree or disagree?
I agree. It's an overreaction. And I think it's fair to point out some of the decision-making that did not go well yesterday. The fake punt we just looked at on video, and there have been some others. And it's fair to criticize decision-making for Bill O'Brien. I think it's also fair to note this, that Bill O'Brien, behind the microphone, publicly, has an edge to him, right? He's not this super amicable, fun-loving, the kind of guy that the public wins you over in the court of public opinion. And I think that does impact the way that we view coaches in the NFL and really in all sports. He's been the head coach for 7 years now. They've won at least 9 games in 6 of those 7 seasons. And I'm not trying to be as simplistic as wins are the only thing that matters, but typically that's what
they point
to when
a guy gets
coaches. They sure do. And they have consistently competed for the division title. I understand they have not made as deep of a playoff run as you would hope they would have made because of their previous blue chip talent on defense and now their prodigious young quarterback in Deshaun Watson. But I think I'd rather ride this out and keep seeing it through for a guy that's really respected within NFL circles. And the quarterback went to the mat for him yesterday. I mean, Deshaun put his stamp of approval on Bill O'Brien yesterday, and I didn't get the sense in listening to that was simply, well, what else am I going to say? Fire the guy? Because I felt like that was a more impactful meaning from Deshaun Watson.
To Field's point, a really good surgeon with a bad bedside manner is still a really good surgeon.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And
well said, Tim.
So I think that Field alluded to how he's respected in NFL circles. People think he's a good coach. And I think that some of the stuff that he's done in his time in Houston, when you think about some of the quarterback situations that he had to deal with prior to getting Deshaun Watson, what they've done, and I think kind of the trajectory that they are on with Deshaun, I hated the fake punt decision. With that being said, that's not enough to rip up what they have started to build with him. And so for that reason, I think it would be an overreaction.
What are we saying if we wake up today and they didn't squander a 24-point lead, right?
Right, then he's going to the NFC Championship game, and it's a whole different conversation.
You know,
I think one thing that's fair to point out, though, is that there are people that still wonder if the alignment in the front office is constructed the way they need it.
I should have alluded to that. But that hasn't helped him coach any better.
Right. I would just say that it might be worth them considering bringing in, just hiring a general manager.
Right. The Texans don't have a general manager, so that's where they stand right now.
And people will tell you that when you deal with the Texans in trade negotiations, et cetera, that Bill O'Brien's prominently involved, which he is, but it might help him to have a little bit lesser load on the personnel front.
Well, in one-score games this season, the Packers are now 9-1, including the playoffs. Those 9 wins set a new single-season franchise record, and their only loss in a one-score game came this season, came all the way back in Week 4 against the Eagles when Aaron Rodgers was picked off on a potential game-winning drive. So, it's gone pretty well. Aaron Rodgers has exceeded expectations this season. Victor, is that an overreaction?
I don't think it is. I think I'm going to go with not an overreaction. I just think that when you came into the league, when you came into the season this year, you think about Matt LaFleur and you think about, you know, how that relationship between him and Aaron Rodgers was going to pan out, obviously them being so close in age and just figuring out how this offense was going to work. You kind of had some question marks, right, especially at receiver. Though Jordy Nelson isn't there anymore. Guys like Randall Cobb, Greg Jennings, all these different pass catchers that they had that you kind of go into these games like, okay, yeah, Aaron Rodgers is going to throw for 300. We already know you could just sign it up for 300 every time you lined up, but not this time around, not this season. So, yeah, I had some question marks going in, and he continued to exceed those. And obviously he hasn't played his best football this year. We're used to seeing Aaron Rodgers being able to throw for 350 at a clip each and every week, but he hasn't had those types of years. But he's had those games where he's just willing his team to victory, getting the ball to Devontae. I mean, what a baller he is. I love watching wide receivers just get busy. And that was, you know, I was just salivating the whole weekend watching him get busy, because that's what you want. You want to have those number one guys prove that they're number one guys. And he should be in the conversation for best receivers in the league year in and year out because he's putting together these types of numbers. So he's definitely exceeded expectations for me this year.
Tim?
I'm going to say not an overreaction. What Vic's saying is right, but I'm going a different direction with this. We spent the entire offseason kind of talking about how Aaron Rodgers is hard to coach. Aaron Rodgers can kind of be abrasive. He didn't really fight for Mike McCarthy when Mike McCarthy was in Green Bay. And now he's got this younger coach. And how is that relationship going to work out? I mean, basically everyone said Aaron Rodgers is hard to deal with. He's hard to get along with. And, you know, the marriage between he and the head coach. Yeah, good luck with that, especially being a younger head coach. Yeah. And you know what he did? He got along with him. And now they are a game away from going to the Super Bowl. So I think in many respects, you have a brand new head coach. And you've accomplished as a team what they've accomplished this year. And I think that part of the situation, if we look at Aaron Rodgers in terms of exceeding expectations, you know, Victor alludes to the numbers. I think part of what happens for some quarterbacks, especially as they get older and they understand, like, Aaron doesn't need more numbers. You know, just like Drew Brees doesn't need more numbers. Like, for Aaron, I think that there have been elements of that offense has played differently. And I think he has played differently. Mm-hmm. And I think that has a lot to do with being coachable, which is what people weren't sure that he could do at this stage of his career, and he did it. And so I don't think it's an overreaction.
I think it is an overreaction. And you guys have said, you know, you said they don't need the numbers. But still, numbers set a standard for us that we are accustomed to with Aaron Rodgers. 36, he's now been playing football, obviously, since his young 20s, despite having to sit out for a few seasons while Brett Favre still has started there in Green Bay. And I don't mean this. I mean that as a sign of respect, really, right? It's that we are so accustomed to Aaron Rodgers being the most prolific or one of the most prolific quarterbacks in football. It just wasn't that statistically this year. Obviously, as always, the interceptions were very low, but passing yards, passing touchdowns, not to the same level we have seen in the past. And yes, the Packers are now 14-3. 10 of their 17 games this year, as we just saw in that graphic, were decided by one score or less. So they have found ways to win that have included a running back that's got 21 total touchdowns this season in Aaron Jones, a defense that has perhaps the best pass-rushing duo, at least for this year, in Za'Darius and Preston Smith. So Rodgers is still incredible. The guy's first-ballot Hall of Famer, and he has the chance to head back to his second Super Bowl as a starter. But I don't think he's over. I don't think he's exceeded the expectations, because my expectations for Aaron Rodgers every year are for him to be leading his team into a championship game setting every single season.
And that's the biggest thing for me, is when you give Aaron Rodgers a running game, it changes everything. It allows the play-action pass to be available to you. It allows all those bootlegs. That's why that play with Davante Adams works so well, because we're used to seeing him bootleg and go to the right, bootleg, go to the left. Now it's bootleg right. Oh, yeah, he's running an angle route the opposite way, and that's how we get a touchdown. So that helps the running game.
Aaron Rodgers will play for his fourth NFC championship next weekend, and all of those, by the way, have come on the road, for what it's worth. So it can be done. The 14-win Ravens fell short in their first and only postseason game. They were only able to post 12 points in that loss. According to the Elias Sports Bureau, that's the fewest points in a team's first playoff game since the merger in 1970, after leading the league in scoring all season. Here's what the Ravens had to say following the loss.
I feel like we were too excited. You know, we wanted to score points. Appreciate you. We wanted to score points, like, right away, you know, as soon as they scored. But we just got our element a little too fast, you know, trying to beat them to the punch. We just were slow today a little bit.
I think, honestly, the sad reality of it is, you know, this Ravens team, you know, we've been here 2 years in a row, and we've lost. So I think, you know, you got to look yourself in the mirror. And I think it's this team right now, his identity is to get the playoffs and choke. And just, you know, it is what it is. That's just the hard truth.
Oh, boy. He used the choke word. Overreaction Monday. The Ravens lost to the better team on Saturday. And before you answer, Tim, hello to Mike Tannenbaum with us on this Monday afternoon, as he often is. Tim,
to go
overreaction.
First, they lost to the better team?
Yeah.
That's an overreaction. I agree with Marlon Humphrey.
That would be a choke.
I think they choked.
Okay.
Listen, it's the one seed. They're supposed to win. They were the better team all season long. And I think when you look at, you know, the way this team kind of acted all season long. I mean, they're posing for pictures on the sideline when the game is still, you know, going on, including the defensive coordinator. Like, you have, you know, the head coach talking about how, you know, the game is going to be revolutionized by the quarterback, and how just everything is different for this team. They basically are like kind of destined for this moment. And then next thing you know, they get behind by 14 points. And then they asked that quarterback that ran all over the league to throw it 50-something times. Like, I think they got into a situation where they weren't playing with a lead, and I think they panicked. And I think, another word for that in the postseason would be to choke.
Yeah,
I think they have. I when you have your own players saying that that's what happened to you,
well, that doesn't help the cause. I would agree with that.
Or it helps my cause.
It helps. Yes. In fairness, it helps your cause. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I see it differently than Tim. That is not an overreaction. Tennessee was the better team. If you look over the last month of the season, they're playing as well as anybody. And of the four teams left right now, I think Derrick Henry is one of the five best players in our sport.
I don't know. The Chiefs can stop him.
Yeah.
I know.
And not only that, on the other side of the ball, when you look at the guys up front, Jarrell Casey and Jeffrey Simmons, Correa, and Landry, those guys are really strong, athletic. They're dominant. They can play in space. And with this guy on the other side of the ball, I think they're going to be hard to beat in terms of this week against Kansas City. So if they had played Baltimore five more times, I think they win most of those games. Mm-hmm. And it was just a good matchup for Tennessee.
Can I start by saying I just love having UMass alum up here?
There we go.
There's three of us
decisions.
On this panel today.
They're making smart decisions. I'm going not an overreaction.
Thanks,
to
man.
Look, I think Mike Tyson said it best. Everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the mouth. And I think the opening drive on that interception and the way Lamar Jackson took that guy down, that they got punched in the mouth and they didn't know how to climb back from that. And you saw that with every single drive. They began to press. They were out of character. They weren't being themselves. And I think Tennessee was just sitting back and saying, We feel like we got the better running game. We feel like we have the better offense right now. We're playing with a different level of confidence than they are right now in this moment. And they continue to put their foot on the gas each and every time they got the football, or whether it was defensively getting after Lamar Jackson. And that secondary of the Tennessee Titans really surprised me. They were at the hip of each and every one of these wide receivers in every timely situation. And every time that there was a big play that needed to be made by the Ravens, that Titans secondary stepped up and either got a pass deflection or an interception or a big play to change the scope of that football game.
I like that. Everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the mouth. That's really about the truth. Field?
Mike and Victor, I respect you guys and your football opinions.
I have a feeling we get a butt here.
This is absolutely an overreaction.
Fire the field.
Wait, is or isn't?
It is an overreaction. I agree with Tim.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought.
We're about a team in the Baltimore Ravens that entered the playoffs with 12 straight wins. And they weren't particularly close. And they were the better team over the last month of the regular season. Their backups were better than Pittsburgh's starters in Week 17, who were scratching and clawing to get into the playoffs. Tim mentioned it. This is a team that was already booking their flights for Miami, talking about this run they're about to embark upon, and it's possible. But we just witnessed perhaps the second greatest, or at least one of the five greatest, individual seasons at the quarterback spot from Lamar Jackson that we've ever seen in the 100 years of this sport. The confidence and bravado emanating from Baltimore was limitless. This was an absolute flattening job by the Titans over the Ravens. Of course, to me, this is 100%.
Titans beat the Chiefs, does it change anything for you two?
No, I don't think it changes anything. They were the one seed. I think that, and Derrick Henry's been great, but Lamar Jackson was the MVP nearly unanimously.
But when you look at when Ryan Tannehill took over at Tennessee, they had played much better.
Listen, I'm not saying that there aren't other good teams. I think that there are other good teams. I would just say this, too, to add to, you know, what the perspective of the team and kind of what they thought. Earl Thomas basically came out and was like, oh, look at these New England Patriots defend. They don't even want to tackle Derrick Henry. You're basically like that doesn't happen a whole lot in the NFL. Earl Thomas did that, and then you know what happened? He got embarrassed by him. Yeah. They were calling their shot and then struck out.
They were certainly confident. So if you're factoring that into the equation,
that would be
here,
a joke.
The biggest thing I love is that you knew Derrick Henry was going to get the ball 25 times, couldn't do nothing about it.
They were saying that they were going to.
And they did that 2 weeks in a row.
Not just once, but twice.
Well, yeah, I truly sense a bit of entitlement coming into this game that, hey, Lamar versus Mahomes is going to be amazing next Sunday in Baltimore.
Right.
There was just a Derrick Henry freight train in the meantime.
People were going to ask to see that if we were going to see Houston play Tennessee in the AFC Championship game.
All right. Let's go rapid fire here, shall we? As we do on Mondays sometimes, Tim, we'll start with you. Titans playing on the road is a non-factor Sunday in Kansas City.
It's an overreaction. Going into Kansas City in that environment, well, that crowd noise doesn't help you. I understand, you feel like you're up against it and all of that, but you know, it helps your defense to play with a lot of crowd noise. And so, look, does the run game travel? Yeah, it travels. But it doesn't help you defend Patrick Mahomes by going on the road and having to have your defense play in a quiet stadium. That's not an advantage. And so, to me, you know, that's an overreaction.
All right, Field Yates, how about this? We'll talk about San Francisco for just a minute. The 49ers defensive line is the best unit remaining in the postseason.
Yeah, I thought about saying overreaction because Patrick Mahomes by himself would be the best position unit. But that being said, not an overreaction, just a dominant group up front, guys that can play both from the edge. They've got good depth in the interior. They've got rushers that get the job done in a variety of different ways. Nick Bosa is laughing on the sidelines after getting medical attention because he lost his breath for a second here. Just a dominant player. On this exact play, they're so good. They're so deep. They're so talented. It's going to be a huge challenge for Green Bay's offensive line next week.
All right, we'll stay with the defense for just a minute. Victor, the Seahawks should let free agent Jadeveon Clowney walk this offseason.
This is not an overreaction for me. I think when you look at his career, especially this year, he's been called for encroachment or has had some discipline issues 9 times this season. And then he's had some plays just in this past game this weekend where you kind of look and he's costing his team because of discipline issues, staying on his side of the field, staying on the side of the ball. And I know what he brings to the table. I know he brings a lot of pass rushing abilities, which you always need, but I just think they need to move on.
All right, Mike T, the Vikings should move on from Kirk Cousins following the 2020 season. So one more year.
Yeah, Wendy, they absolutely should. That's not an overreaction, Tim.
Whoa.
Yeah, we
right,
know that
then.
Quarterbacks are judged on wins and losses.
Shot fired.
He's 18-12-1 over the last 2 years, guys. That's 13th in the league. He's been an average quarterback and he paid too much money. There are better options out there, better use of the salary cap.
Wow, gone are the days where they backed up the truck, huh? The Kirk Cousins sweepstakes.
Yeah, that truck's moving on down the road.
That truck's loaded up and moving on. All right. Listen, as we headed into the weekend, there was one remaining head coaching vacancy that belonged to the Cleveland Browns. It appears that is not the case any longer. The Browns plan to hire Vikings coordinator Kevin Stefanski. He's the OC in Minnesota. He was a finalist for the Browns job last year. That was prior to the Browns promoting Freddie Kitchens, who was fired after a lone season. So Cleveland has their guy in the form of Kevin Stefanski. He actually, again, interviewed last year. He spent his entire coaching career with the Vikings. He started as an assistant to the head coach under Brad Childress before working his way up to the offensive coordinator position under Mike Zimmer. Field, I'll start with you. Again, a rookie head coach. That was the case with Freddie Kitchens, so back-to-back. Why, in this case, is it Kevin Stefanski?
Well, the Browns didn't necessarily tip their hand, but we knew that the prominent players in this search involved two coaches that were still coaching over the weekend, Stefanski and also Robert Saleh. But Stefanski was on their radar as a finalist last year. He's been with the Vikings for the entirety of his NFL coaching career, as you just saw on that graphic. But he seems to align with some of the philosophical beliefs that the Browns have right now. And I think the word analytics gets thrown around a little bit too broadly sometimes in the sport of football. But the Browns are looking to take an analytical approach. And I think that Kevin Stefanski is on board with some of the tenets of that that the Browns are looking to institute. We'll see where they end up with the general manager. But for now, they have an important piece in place to Kevin Stefanski.
Paul DePodesta has been in the wings in Cleveland. This is who he wanted from the get-go, even two seasons ago. So he gets his man. Mike, I know you represented Stefanski at one point. What's he bring to the table here?
Yeah, I think it's a good hire from a standpoint. Kevin is a steadying sort of presence. He's open-minded, which Field has alluded to. And I think for what that organization needs, he'll bring a lot to the table in terms of after all the noise that happened last year with Freddie Kitchens. He has sort of a understated sort of presence about him, but a natural leader, very smart, played at University of Pennsylvania. So it's a good hire. The one question that I know a lot of people had around the league was after they went through kind of this Freddie Kitchens one-and-done situation, would they go with a more experienced guy like Josh McDaniels? But if they were going to go the route of someone that's never done it before, I think Kevin Stefanski is, again, as Field said, good alignment. And, again, I like his poise. I like his presence.
Tim, you have any issues here that they would go with someone who has no head coaching experience again or just a coincidence that he follows Freddie Kitchens?
I don't. And I think that sometimes we can listen. Do I think that head coaching experience matters? I do. I think it can help somebody. But should that be a disqualifying, should that be a disqualifier for somebody? I don't think it should be. If you possess a lot of the characteristics that Mike is talking about, I also think this if you just look and say, okay, what does Cleveland need? I think Cleveland needs someone with good organization skills, someone with good, discipline skills. And I think that you need somebody to kind of just professionalize that group up a little bit. And by all accounts, it seems like Stefanski would do that.
I just love the fact that Stefanski has experience working with two receivers that are stars, right? And Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. I think he's coming into the Cleveland Browns situation and having to work with two receivers that are stars and how to get them in positions to be successful, how to get them in positions to score a bunch of touchdowns and have a bunch of catches. I think that's what I look at specifically from an offensive play calling perspective is him understanding how to get two stud receivers going at a high level. And I think that's what he's going to bring to the table in Cleveland.
One other X factor when you hire an inexperienced coach, and I've been through this a few times, is you want to have somebody that's been a former head coach. Great example of that was Sean McVay, brings in Wade Phillips. Yep. Obviously, they had tremendous success. So we should really keep an eye on who does Kevin Stefanski bring with him, and can he backfill some of that experience with maybe a couple former head coaches?
Very true.
Yeah, I almost think you need to do that because the stuff that you're going to face after being a coordinator, and you know this, just like off the field stuff. Like you have a great game and then the guy gets arrested. You know what I mean? Like there are things that you have to deal with that I think having the benefit of the wisdom of somebody that's gone through that before, you know, is critical.
And let's be honest, the type of guys that are in Cleveland, things happening around the, you know, outside of the football field are likely.
Yeah, I mean, he just says what everybody's thinking.
It is,
it's 100%. It's likely those issues will arise.
By the way, he played at Penn in the Ivy League. Is UMass?
You want to stick around? Tim needs to give up some airtime.
Just stick around for one more segment.
You don't worry about it. He doesn't have anything to say. Okay, we're a week away from the conference championship games, and already our head coaching vacancies are filled. Ron Rivera, he'll start with the Redskins. Matt Rhule takes his place for the Panthers. Then to round things out, Mike McCarthy heads the Cowboys, Joe Judge the Giants, and now Kevin Stefanski the Browns. Pat Shurmur departed from the New York Football Giants, but he has a new job. He will take over, it appears, as the offensive coordinator in Denver. The Broncos finished 28th in total offense and scoring, leading to the change. And Shurmur, of course, recently fired as the Giants head coach. The Jaguars and offensive coordinator John DeFilippo have mutually agreed to part ways after a single season. Jacksonville announced that decision today, saying that Coach Doug Marrone will immediately begin the search for a new offensive coordinator. Marrone's job proved safe just a week or so ago. Well, between Clemson and LSU, there are five players ranked in the top 25 of Mel Kiper Jr.'s big board, headlined by quarterback Joe Burrow. Under center for Clemson will be Trevor Lawrence, who's expected to go early in the 2021 NFL draft. There has never been a college national championship game featuring two quarterbacks that were selected first in their respective drafts. But there's a first time for everything. And for more, we say hello to Mel Kiper Jr. And Mel, Joe Burrow playing in the biggest game of his life tonight against Clemson, who's got an incredible defense. What are you looking for tonight out of the young quarterback?
Joe Burrow has been remarkably consistent. When every game this year, he completed 71% of his passes or higher. That is unbelievable. You think about last year, he was at 58% for the season. Now he's at 78%. You think about touchdowns last year, 16. He's at 55 this year. He has been remarkable. To go back to where he was considered in August to be a late round pick and no better than a backup quarterback in the NFL to be the number one pick overall. Joe Brady had something to do with that coming from the Saints, bringing that offense. Steve Emsminger, the coordinator there with Brady. The players got better. The receivers weren't dropping as many passes. Clyde Edwards-Helaire gave him a strong running game. The offensive line got it done. But Joe Burrow, the marked improvement, as improved as any player I can ever remember, Wendy, to go from, as I said, a late-round pick at best to the number one pick overall. Just unbelievable. And we've seen that the last couple of years with Baker Mayfield, who was at a third-round grade coming in, and then, of course, Kyler Murray, who was off the charts and then became the number one pick.
All right, Mel, take us through who else you have your eye on tonight.
A lot of good players on the field, really on both sides of the ball. But I think for Clemson, when you're going up against Joe Burrow, Isaiah Simmons, who can be probably anywhere between the fourth pick and the seventh, eighth pick, outside linebacker, should be all over the field. You think about a guy, led him in tackles for loss and sacks, second in total tackles and interceptions. He's got to be a factor running and covering where he runs and covers like a cornerback, the way he flips his hips and turns and looks back for the football, and the way he gets after the quarterback. He'll have to do that, obviously, against Joe Burrow. We mentioned Joe Burrow and why he improved. A lot of that was Justin Jefferson, wide receiver. Eliminated some of those costly drops. He was phenomenal. Last two games, 21 receptions, 342 yards, and five touchdowns. We'll see what A.J. Terrell, cornerback for Clemson, could do up against Justin Jefferson. Justin Jefferson right now, a late first, early second-round pick. On the defensive side for LSU at that safety spot, Grant Delpit. You think about a guy who can do everything you want a safety to do, but he didn't miss a lot of tackles this year. He was bothered by that ankle injury, got healthy late in the season. He needs to be at his best in this game going up against Trevor Lawrence. Grant Delpit right now, I project more of a mid-first round pick. Thought back early in August he would be maybe top 10 pick. The struggles in tackling moved him into that mid to late first round area. Wide receiver T. Higgins from Clemson. He's 6'4". He's got that great catch radius. and he was red hot up until the Ohio State game. Ohio State contained T. Higgins. He didn't look real explosive. He didn't get a lot of separation. He needs to come up big, and he's going to be challenged because LSU has a couple corners. And one of those corners for LSU is Christian Fulton. Christian Fulton had a solid year. He's been a little up and down in coverage, but he put it all together, I thought, mid to late this season. Opposite Derek Stingley, the great true freshman corner. That means Trevor Lawrence is going to have to be on top of his game going up against the two corners for LSU with Fulton and Stingley and that outstanding safety in Grant Delpit.
All right, Mel, stay with us. A little overreaction Monday. You know we do that here, and since you're with us, we're going to get you to play along. Mm-hmm. Trevor Lawrence will be a better NFL quarterback than will Joe Burrow. Is Mel up first? Is that an overreaction, Mel?
I think the question could be a bit of an overreaction to all these things that have happened. It's just what it is, guys. It's about a quarterback who in one season did something remarkable. And for Trevor, he was expected to be coming out of high school the number one guy, which he was. He was talked about last year as the number one guy. He would be the number one guy this year ahead of Burrow, and he'll be the number one guy next year. He's Andrew Luck. He's Peyton Manning in that regard. Joe Burrow was not even that kind of player, as I said. So it's unfair. I will say this. The higher graded player will be Trevor Lawrence. That doesn't always mean he'll be the better pro. So I think tonight's game will tell us something. Obviously, Trevor's got another season to go, but on pure grade alone, guys, you would shade Trevor Lawrence.
Oh, but the question is an overreaction, says Mel. He's going next level. Tim, overreaction or no?
I'll say not an overreaction. Mel said the higher graded player will be Trevor Lawrence. I think it'd be the higher graded player by a lot. You know, Mike knows this. When you look at quarterbacks and you know, Bill Parcells used to have a formula of how many starts he wanted a quarterback to have. And while Burrow has played a lot, last year wasn't like this year is. For Trevor Lawrence, the amazing thing is he had all these expectations coming out of high school. He takes over a job for a guy that's a capable or more than capable starter, and then he plays incredible. And he does that by putting together another season where he plays incredible. And he's going to be forced to do it again because of the rules next year. Trevor Lawrence is going to basically have 2 3/4 seasons as a starting quarterback at Clemson where the production and the play is going to check a ton of boxes. And then the physical, you know, skill set, he's a superior athlete and thrower to Joe Burrow. So I think the grade won't be the same. And I think he does end up being a better pro.
I just think it's an overreaction. When I look at Joe Burrow, he just looks – if I'm putting together my team and I'm picking a quarterback right now, I'm picking Joe Burrow. His stature, his ability to stay calm under pressure, his ability to go through adversity, being down some points and not pressing and still sticking to his game plan, his accuracy. Not that Trevor Lawrence doesn't have all of these, but I just, when I look, the eye test, when I look at Joe Burrow, I want my team to be led by a player like that because of what he brings to the table. So I'm going with Joe Burrow on this one.
Well, if you were from Wendy Nix territory, the great state of South Carolina, then they'd
That's
be
right.
telling you that the character and the stature and the football integrity that Joe Burrow has, Trevor Lawrence also has. Mm-hmm. Won 25 straight games to begin his college career. Not an overreaction for me as well. And listen, age can sometimes, as we know with quarterbacks, not be as important. These guys are playing until they're 40. Trevor Lawrence is 20 years old. He's 20. Tim does a great job calling games on the ACC network. And he'll tell you, right, would you agree with this, Tim, that obviously Trevor, he's 6'6".
He's all right.
He's imposing, but he can fill out, too.
He, as a high school player, looked like college. But Jeff Saturday tells a great story of meeting him because Jeff coaches high school football in Georgia, meeting Trevor Lawrence. And, you know, Jeff played nearly 15 years at center in the NFL. He said when he shook his hand, you know, he basically like swallowed Jeff's elbow.
Like,
look, I felt like a little kid meeting him. So I think in terms of like what he looks like and just like looking the part, like eye test, Trevor Lawrence is off the charts that way.
And I think he'll only grow into that a little bit more. And his athletic ability is sensational. I mean, we saw it in that Ohio State game. That really was the play that kickstarted the offense for Clemson in that game. The 60 or so yard run that he took in for a touchdown when it's like, that guy's that fast? Right. Okay.
Poor Mel. Hold on, Mike. We'll get your opinion. But I think Mel's, where are you, Mel? There you are.
Right here, Wendy. One thing about Trevor Lawrence, the first 7 games, he was 14 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. The last 7 games, he was 22 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. So his year was a little bit uneven, where that wasn't the case with Joe Burrow. And for Trevor Lawrence, he played a much easier schedule. Burrow played a much more challenging schedule by miles. So I would say with physical ability and talent, sure, Lawrence. But does that mean he'll be better? Not necessarily. Think about the late, great Johnny Unitas. Think about Tom Brady. You think about Drew Brees. There's a lot of quarterbacks that didn't have enormous physical talent, but were phenomenal quarterbacks. So that's why I say this is a tough question. It's really an unfair question because Lawrence has another year. He's younger. Burrow was remarkable. But this year, if you go by just this year, Burrow was the better quarterback over Trevor Lawrence. Talent is Lawrence, but the better year was clearly Joe Burrow.
Thanks, Mel.
Don't hate on the question, Mel. You can't do that. We'll let Mike T be the tiebreaker here.
Yeah, I hate to disagree with Vic, but I would have to go with Trevor Lawrence, so I would say it's not an overreaction from this standpoint. I agree with everything that's been said. Two other things. Let's not overcomplicate things. He's never lost a game as a starter. And two, going back to what you talked about with Coach Parcells, when Trevor Lawrence walks in the room, he looks like he has the better chance to being built to last. From the waist down, he looks like the bigger guy. I've seen Joe Burrow three times live this year. My only concern about Joe Burrow is, does he have the physique to withstand the rigors of a 16-game season? And no more than this season did we see how important it is to have durability at the quarterback position. And the fact that Joe Burrow has only done it for 1 year is a concern. Now, if I'm Cincinnati, I'm turning in the card. But if I had to pick between the two, I'm going with Lawrence.
Right. And, of course, you won't have to pick between the two, at least not this time around, because exactly. As Mel aptly pointed out, he's got another season. He'll come out in 2021. Mel, thank you. We'll let you play again. We're not mad at you.
Anytime.
Mike, thanks for joining us as well. New on NFL Live from our Chiefs reporter, Adam Teicher. Andy Reid said he's not sure Chris Jones will play against the Titans, said he wasn't close to playing against the Texans. He couldn't push off, according to the head coach. Beast mode was back. Marshawn Lynch averaged just 1.8 yards per rush in his two games this postseason, by far his lowest in any of his six playoff appearances. But he did show up his signature goal line tenacity, punching in two touchdowns on the ground in Seattle's loss. And after it, he had some advice for younger players.
I done been on the other side of a retirement, and it's good when you get over there and you can do what the f*** you want to. So I tell y'all right now, while y'all in it, take care of y'all bread. So when y'all done, you go ahead and take care of yourself. So while y'all at it right now, take care of y'all bodies. You know what I mean? Don't take care of y'all chicken. You feel me? Don't take care of y'all mentals. Because, look, we ain't lasting that long. You know, I had a couple of players that I played with that, you know what I mean, they no longer here no more. They no longer. So, I mean, you feel me? Start taking care of y'all mentals, y'all bodies, and y'all chicken for when y'all, you know, ready to walk away. You walk away and you be able to do what you want to do. But I appreciate it. Thank y'all. Y'all have a good day.
All right, a little sounds good, sounds bad on the Marshawn Lynch career advice. Listen, certainly taking care of yourself seems like a wise decision, Victor.
This sounds great to me. I just think, obviously, this is said in Marshawn Lynch's way, the way he...
certain vernacular.
The only way he knows how to get his point across is this way. But I think the message is clear, is take care of your body, take care of yourself. I mean, I had a player that I ran onto the field with during the Super Bowl win that's no longer with me, that's no longer here. And those things, you know, you realize how real football is and how real this game is and how detrimental it can be to your livelihood, both whether you have CTE or you have those challenges, or you just didn't take care of your chicken right, and you're left without the amount of money, and you still have to go out there and work hard and things of that nature. So,
and chicken in this case, talk about taking care of the money.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly. Of course, sounds great. And there are a lot of players that have been in the league for a long time that are certainly respected. But there is a certain way that players across the league seem to universally hold Marshawn Lynch in this reverential manner, right? He's sort of this spirit that everybody loves Marshawn Lynch, right? That I think because he speaks so infrequently in such a unique way that when he speaks, it might even carry more meaning than if somebody else were to convey this message in the NFL. It just means a little bit more. I think this is going to hit home for some players. There are going to be some guys that are going to be thinking not about their football immortality, maybe about their football mortality, that like maybe one day my time will come and let's pay attention to this guy, beast mode, and follow
him. And it's just real. I think anytime you've ever spoken to Marshawn Lynch, whether it be in front, you know, on the field or off the field, he's just a realist guy. He's not going to sugarcoat anything. He's not lying to you about anything. He's going to be honest and straightforward about how he feels about whatever's on his mind.
And he's not there just so he doesn't get fined.
Correct. It sounds good. It actually sounds exactly the way I worded my advice to Field when he signed his big deal.
I told him. You're
I was like, Field, take care of your chicken and your mentals.
Yeah.
Take care of your mentals. Like, I mean, I think the unique situation is this. Usually when football is over for a guy, it's over. It's it. It's you don't get another crack at it. What's interesting for Marshawn is because it ended, right?
He's got a retired. Peek at the other side.
And more than a peek. And then he got like another taste back into it. And like, I do think your perspective is different that way. Your perspective is different when you've been retired and you know what it's like. And you're like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, I was tired from playing, but there were some good parts about that. And there were some, you know, some perks that come with that. And so I think that perspective, most players that I've been around, their career ends 3 years before they think it's going to end. And so usually like when it's time for it to be over, you're surprised by it. That's how it is for 99% of the guys. And so a perspective of someone who's kind of been on both sides of it, I think is important.
Makes sense.
But Field, did you take care of the chicken?
I'm take care of your chicken.
You're here. I don't
you
know.
See this
I don't
suit,
know what that
Wendy?
Says. He's sitting right here.
Chicken. Look at this suit. Yeah.
Well, that's true.
I had to talk to...
The Packers and 49ers square off first in the NFC. Amazing considering both teams had losing records last year. In the AFC, the Titans and Chiefs will battle it out with a Super Bowl trip up for grabs. One final overreaction on this Monday. The Packers and the 49ers. The 49ers are going to Miami. Victor.
This is an overreaction, guys. Mainly because
which means you pick the Packers.
I'm picking the Go Pack Go on
go
this
pack
one.
Go.
I just think that Aaron Rodgers has shown me that he can just get it done. He can flat out get it done. And the reason he can get it done is because of Devontae Adams. I think the way he gets the ball to him, I think the chemistry that they both have. And listen, I can speak to a little chemistry between a quarterback and receiver. I've been there with Eli Manning. And when you're on the same page with your quarterback like they are, you feel like you are untouchable. You go through these practices. You understand exactly how you want to attack this team. And I think they're doing that as we speak. And I think when you have that level of confidence between your quarterback and your wide receiver, only good things come from that. And the Niners are going to have their hands full trying to guard Devontae Adams because he's a spectacular talent.
If it does happen, Aaron Rodgers will go 9 years between starts in the Super Bowl.
Wow.
Largest gap ever by a starting quarterback, which would break the record previously held by John Elway when 8 years between his two Super Bowl starts, or two of his Super Bowl starts, I should say.
But, overreaction or no?
I'm just saying if it did, fair enough. We'll go with that.
Tim?
I agree with Field. It's not an overreaction, and it would be the longest stretch between quarterbacks. but I will say, I think the issue is I don't think the Packers can block the 49ers. Yeah. I don't think they can. They're banged up at tackle. Mm-hmm. The last time they played them, they couldn't block them. Like Aaron Rodgers, they scored 8 points. They really struggled offensively. And I think when we look at the Niners now, I think they're better now than they were last time they played on the defensive side of the ball. So
37-8.
Surely that offense, that Green Bay offense.
Aaron had like 100 and like
it was ugly.
It was bad.
Ugly.
It was really bad.
So you have to think they're playing better as well, though, that Green Bay offense, because they are.
A little better.
And Aaron Rodgers can create offense, and Devontae Adams is great. But if you just get dominated up front, it's what we saw all weekend. The team that just dominated the other team up front, like they won the game. Yeah. Look at the Vikings, you know.
Yeah.
That Vikings team could run the football. But
we're going to see Aaron Rodgers. He's not going to be a sitting duck in that pocket. He's going to be moving around. He's not going to be an easy guy to just come and sit back there 7 yards.
He plays well on the road.
And being attacked by Joey Bosa and company.
All right. Thank you for that information, Field. New on NFL Live from our Texans reporter, Sarah Barshop. Bill O'Brien hasn't met with owner Cal McNair, but when asked whether the Texans will hire a GM, he said, "The way I see it right now, it stays the way it is." Now, here are sounds of the weekend.
We got our for the day, for real, so going home.
In the end, there's only one team that gets to be the one true champion, and that's not going to be us this year.
This team right now, his identity is to get the playoffs and choke.
I mean, I'm not really disappointed. I mean, like I said, it's NFL football. We just didn't go our way. In order to strive for those highs that you're going to potentially face the consequence of the lows that come with it. And that's where we are.
So, I mean, you feel me? Start taking care of y'all mentals, y'all bodies, and y'all chicken. I appreciate it. Thank y'all.
Before we get started, I just want to introduce to y'all, we got the NFL rushing leader.
If anybody else got to say something different about that, then come see me.
Big Trust. Woo, woo. King Henry.
Henry to Corey Davis. Oh, my goodness. That play is from the 1800s.
Our defense? They're pretty good, right?
Whether it's 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014, I get tired of the excuses, you know, for why I'm good.
Pat Mahomes, man. Best quarterback in the National Football League.
I was like chasing a chicken in the field with no fence.
Just old school football right there, you know? And I love it. I love it.
He left when you guys were down 24-0 because he said it was in the best interest of the team. What would you say to that thing?
Watch the next game at home.
On Saturday, Steelers coach Bill Cowher surprised on set with CBS by Pro Football Hall of Fame president David Baker, who announced that Cowher will be enshrined in Canton. And then at halftime of the Seahawks-Packers, there was this.
But there's always room for one surprise guest, especially when it's this man coming in right now from the Pro Football Hall of Fame, David Baker, the president.
On behalf of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, thank you, Coach, for all you've done for the game. Thank you for all you're going to do for the game. It's my great honor to tell you that you're going to be the 328th Hall of Famer into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And your legacy is going to be in Canton, Ohio forever. Congratulations, Coach.
This is so special to me because when you put in the work that we put in, it's nice to know people appreciate it.
I mean, you know, I was lucky enough to see that live, and I still just watching it now, same chills.
Yep. That is
phenomenal.
It's Jimmy's moment, and the first thing he said was, I need to thank my assistant coaches and my players because I'm not here without them.
A class act, extremely well-deserved. Congratulations, Coach. We'll be excited to watch this summer. We got a big game tonight, though. I'm also excited to watch that. Timothy, take us through it.
Tell you what, saw Clemson. Field talked about the ACC network stuff. Saw Clemson three times in person this year. I can't imagine there are better players than the guys they have. 30-27 Clemson.
I'm going LSU over Clemson in this one because I don't want to receive a phone call from Odell Beckham Jr. 41-38 LSU.
Yeah, I'm going 34-28. I also don't want to, not that I would, but I don't want to receive a call from Odell Beckham Jr. But I'm going 34-28 LSU.
He can call me.
Yeah.
He can call me five times because I wouldn't pick against Clemson if they didn't even put a team on the field. If they can play without a quarterback, I'm picking Clemson. Go Tigers,
go.
Looking forward to a great game tonight. Thanks, everybody.
Don't
we'll be back
now,
tomorrow.
Joe.